You are listening to A Good Book on Sun Sounds of Arizona.
Kirin's The Spell of Noan, written and narrated by James D. Priest.
Chapter 48. The next day was again uneventful as the party moved east, widening the gap between themselves and their last haven, the Shillito Cave. In the evening, they found a place to rest and spread out into trees near one another. Tally fell asleep early, but awoke after midnight and was restless, wanting to try the ring again, but knowing how she'd feel when she failed, she held off, not allowing herself to even look at it, though the moon was high in a clear sky. Reclining in her snug tree hole, she peered at the moon out of the corner of her eye, then turned her head to stare. "It's huge," she thought, "white, plump, and shining, and it's full, the first full moon since the night I contacted Jilin. The first full moon!" Sitting up quickly, she saw that something else was the way it was when she made contact, but hadn't been since. The toe ring was glowing, dimly aglow, but alive. She climbed out onto a tree branch. Could it be, she wondered, it works only with a full moon? She sat down and, glancing back and forth between the moon and the ring, her hands couldn't work fast enough to get it off her toe, and she almost dropped the precious thing. Standing up, she held it skyward and gazed at the moon through it. The ring's glow intensified, and for the first time since she saw Jilin with it, a mist filled the circle. "It's working," she thought. "I'll concentrate on him." The haze cleared, and an outline appeared, blurred at first, then clarifying itself, and she could hardly believe her eyes. It was her Jilin, lying down, apparently asleep. "Jilin!" she cried. He didn't move. She called his name several times. Finally, he turned his head sleepily. His eyes were closed, but he answered. "Who's calling?" "Jilin, it's me. I've found you through Olamen's ring." Raising his head, he blinked and glanced about. "Tally?" He sat up, staring about, trying to see where the voice was coming from. "It's not a dream. It's you? You found me? I finally discovered how to activate the ring." He reached for his belt satchel, having taken it off before lying down, and took out the calamar. "It's warm, just like before. Olamen was right. It's working with your ring." "Are you all right?" "I'm fine, but Loana had a terrible accident. She's gradually getting better, and Rugam Chamter is taking care of her. I have so much to tell and ask. Days ago, I sensed something was happening to you. Are you..." His image and voice faded, and the mist returned to the ring. Tally looked at the moon. A bank of clouds was edging across it. "Jilin, can you hear me?" No answer came. The clouds advanced and soon shrouded the moon completely. She tried over and over to reestablish contact, but to no avail, and now she knew why. She needed a full, unencumbered moon, and it was gone. "Spekeren!" she shouted into the trees, not knowing where he was. "Spekeren!" she repeated at the top of her lungs. "I found Jilin and spoke with him!" The old magician's sleepy voice came from a nearby tree. "I thought you said Jilin, but I must have been dreaming. Or were you dreaming, my dear, talking in your sleep?"
"I saw him with my ring," said Tally, and she had a shocking realization.
"Those deep, dark eyes! I saw him! He wasn't invisible! How wonderful! He looked just fine! But Loana is injured, and Rugam Chamter is taking care of her. That means Jilin made it safely home, as we all hoped."
Appearing on branches outside their tree holes, Deliani, Runagar, and Hutt asked what was happening.
"I think Tally's been dreaming," said the magician, "but perhaps not. She says she saw Jilin with her ring. He's not only alive and well, but visible and home with the clan.
I wish I could believe it. If it's true, how was his invisibility reversed? What impact will that have on our quest? Perhaps something's changed that we don't know about.
It wasn't a dream, said Tally. I can contact him again when the moon comes out. I know it. It happened the way it did when I found him in the forest with Hutt. That was the last full moon.
The others were quiet. Then Speckeren spoke.
Let's meet at the foot of Tally's tree.
They climbed down and found each other.
The full moon makes it work, she said, shaking the ring, then holding it out for all to see that it was still glowing faintly. The moon must be full, completely visible, and I must be looking at it through the ring.
Speckeren looked up. They were under the boughs of the tree. Let's move to an open area. They found a clearing and could see the sky, but not the moon. It was still covered by clouds, but they were moving at a fairly rapid pace, and the Kirins waited. Soon the moon's radiant edge shone through. Tally held the ring skyward, the others watching with keen interest. As soon as the entire moon was visible, the ring's glow intensified, and a haze appeared within it. Closing her eyes, Tally concentrated on Jilin. The mist cleared, and a form took shape. Opening them, she saw him seated on a floor.
Jilin!
Startled, he looked at the calamar in his hand. Speckeren and the others crowded around in wonder, barely believing their eyes, Tally holding the ring high. They, too, saw the image, and when he spoke, his voice was clear.
Tally, what happened? We were talking, or was it a dream? Suddenly you were gone, but I can hear you again. Where are you?
Still on the mission, said Tally. Speckeren noted tears in her eyes, so stirred was she at seeing Jilin and finding him safe.
Many things have happened to us, she said, as I am sure they have to you, but we're all well now and greatly relieved you're home.
Jilin looked puzzled.
I'm on the mission too, far from home, but can't go on because of Loana.
You said Rugab Champtor was taking care of her, said Tally. You must be home.
Rugum's here with me, said Jilin. None of us knew it, but he followed us when we left Rogustin. When I was separated from you during the thunderstorm, he followed me, and thankfully so, because we've been together ever since.
A sleepy Rugum wandered into the picture.
What's happening? Who are you talking to?
Why, the outrageous old scoundrel, thought Speckeren. He simply couldn't stay home. And the two of them are carrying on the mission on their own. What courage! I find it all hard to believe.
Tally, said Speckeren, crowding closer,
may I talk with them?
I don't know, said the girl. Try.
Keep holding the ring up, said the magician, and he moved underneath it. This is Speckeren. Can you hear me?
Yes, said the surprised Jilin. Are you with Tally?
Indeed, said the magician. How wonderful that you're visible.
Jilin and Rugum appeared bewildered. Then the overseer spoke.
How are you contacting us?
Jilin put the warm calamar in Rugum's hand.
Through this and Tally's ring.
The elder looked at it, scratched his head, and handed it back.
Whatever. But one thing's sure. You're definitely not visible.
But he's perfectly visible to us, said Speckeren.
He glanced at the others, and they nodded. Then he realized what was happening, and his heart sank.
It's the ring. It casts aside the Granum's spell, penetrates the shroud of invisibility. Jilin, how good to finally see you.
But all in Speckeren's party were disappointed that nothing had changed. Tally noticed a massive cloud bank moving in from the west and pointed it out to the magician.
If the moon is blotted out, we'll lose touch with them. Unless the sky clears, we might not be able to make contact until the next full moon.
We must hurry, said Speckeren. Jilin, Rugum, where are you?
Rugum noted the urgency in his voice.
Moving east, we were in our sixth day of travel when Loana was injured.
Can you give other specifics about where you are? Asked Speckeren.
With humans, said Rugum.
The magician paused.
I didn't hear you right. It sounded like you said with humans.
He laughed nervously.
"In my wildest dreams," said the overseer, "I wouldn't have thought it possible. While Luana is healing, we're living in a man-made structure, part of the time with humans."
Gasps of amazement and horror came from everyone in Speckeron's company.
"Clouds are closing in," said Tally.
"How long will it take Luana to heal?" asked the magician. "Answer quickly." "We've been here 17 days," said Ruggum. "It will be at least that many more before she can attempt to fly, and I'm hardly certain she'll be ready."
The cloud mass spread over the moon's edge, and the transmission ended, to the great disappointment of all, the mist returning to the ring.
"No use trying now," said Tally, lowering it. "We'll contact them again when the moon comes out."
Dumbfounded by this amazing turn of events, Speckeron and the others milled about in the darkness, discussing everything their distant compatriots had said. Ruggum following them, damage to Luana, living with humans. They tried to decide what to say during their next communication, should it come at all.
"We must find them," said Hutt, "or they find us. They can't go on alone."
Speckeron turned to Deliani.
"They had been traveling for 6 days. I've lost track of time. How long have we traveled since losing Jilin?"
She knew exactly.
"Volodans attacked the day after the thunderstorm. We went north in search of Jilin and the campsite. We flew slowly eastward the following day, then traveled 5 days before Tally's accident. We left the Shillitoes yesterday morning. Thus, we have been moving east without Jilin for a little over 7 days."
"Their 6th day, 7 for us," said Speckeron, greatly encouraged. "We might be a day's flight apart. I agree wholeheartedly with Hutt. We must find them."
For days, Speckeron had worried that Tally wouldn't be able to find a way for her ring to lead them to their destination, and the quest would have to be abandoned.
"Now," he thought, "Jilin and his Calamar are back in the picture, if we can locate them."
"If we do find them," said the always practical Deliani, "should we go on without them? Would it be wise for all of us to wait 17 days or longer until Luana can even attempt flying?"
Deliani was right, and the magician was stymied. It wouldn't be prudent to put the mission on hold for an indefinite period of time. It had been delayed long enough by other troubles. But he deeply desired to unite the traveling parties, and strode away from her and the others to be by himself to think. He sat down on the ground, his head in his hands, his mind working as intensely as it ever had.
"Jilin and Ruggum together on the quest, perhaps not far away. How do we find them?"
"Through Tally's ring and Jilin's Calamar.
In the forest at home, the ring drew her to him. Unless we're too far apart, that can happen again. The others must be west of us, having flown a day less. We'll get to them, even if we have to backtrack to do it. But Luana's another story. She must be damaged severely."
He racked his brain for a solution to her problem. Opening his bag, he fumbled through it in the dark, considering all the objects of magic and the supply of healing materials.
"But these are here," he thought, "and she's there, and I'm not convinced any of them would help."
Suddenly he remembered something he hadn't thought of for years, an ancient spell he had never used. He was hardly certain it could work in this situation. But his greatest concern was that it would require a lengthy communication with the other party, which might attract the attention of Granums or other evil creatures.
"I can't send my friends away," he thought, "as I did when I used the Calamar. We don't have time for that, and I'll need their help. It might work, or it could prove disastrous, because Tally must be present, and a Granum might home in on her. For that reason, I was glad I didn't know her location while using the Calamar. I must consult her. This will be a risky business for all of us, but especially her."
He got up and hurried back to the others, who were watching the sky anxiously. Tally thought the gloom above was breaking up.
"I might be able to help Luana," he told Tally, "but it would require being in touch with Jilin and could prove dangerous for you."
"In what way?" asked Deliani, recalling his condition after using the Calamar.
"Something might attack," he said, not mentioning Agronom.
"If it will help Loana," said Tally, "we must do it."
"Brave lass," said Speckerin,
"listen closely. If anything interferes with the transmission, except clouds covering the moon, or the image begins to change, immediately drop the ring to the ground."
Not knowing why, Tally nodded, and Deliani began to suspect what had happened to him. He turned to Deliani.
"I'll need your expertise in Curlace, the moral support of all of you, and more than a little luck."
Vapors were clearing from the moon's face, and its bright border shined through. As soon as the orb showed fully, Tally raised the glowing ring. Its light intensified, and a haze formed within it. She concentrated on Jilin, and the magical instrument didn't fail. He appeared. Speckerin wasted no time.
"Jilin, where's Loana? I'll try to do something to help her."
"Here, can you see her?"
"Go to her immediately."
Jilin got up and walked several steps, his image remaining in the center of the ring. Rugum Chamter was seen to be following. The lad stopped beside Loana.
"What damage does she have?" asked Speckerin intently.
2 compound wing fractures," said Rugum, pointing out the dressings and supports.
"Awaken the bird if she sleeps," said the magician. "She must be part of what we are about to do."
"She's awake and alert," said Rugum.
"Jilin, place your calamar against one wound," said Speckerin.
He glanced at the clouds, moving continually across the heavens.
"Do so now. We might not have another chance."
The lad positioned the calamar over the wound near the body joint, having no idea why. Speckerin spoke to Deliani.
"Stay close. I'll need you."
He closed his eyes, and for the first time any of them had seen it, began placing himself in a trance.
"Lan, Lonelan, Duluan, Robasilam, Gralo, Teilan, Loana," he said.
The voice was deeper than his natural one and seemed to come from a distance, the others listening in amazement. From him came a series of incantations, none of which the observers could understand. Loana began to stir, and he brought himself out of his state of concentration. He asked Deliani for the curlace names of wing segments, then lapsed back into the trance, and unintelligible phrases poured from him. Tally watched the skies, the ring, and the image in it nervously. Clouds and a haze moved across the sky, but nothing shrouded the moon. Bringing himself back to consciousness again, Speckerin instructed Jilin to reposition the calamar over the second wound. Sinking back into his trance, the magician delivered more incantations, and eventually they came to an end. The magician drooped, physically and mentally drained, Runagar and Deliani helping him sit on the ground.
"It is done," he said softly. "Tell them I transmitted a spell to help heal the injuries. Then end the communication. I fear it's being listened to by those we'd least wish to hear it."
Tally told their distant friends.
"Never heard of such a spell," said Rugum.
"It's seldom used," said the magician quietly. "I hope it works."
Only those in his party could hear him.
"How will we find them?" asked Tally, not taking her eyes off the moon, the glowing ring, and Jilin. "We depart in the morning," said Speckerin, "and will rely on your ring and Jilin's calamar to bring us together."
Jilin and Rugum were visibly relieved when Tally gave them the news.
"Jilin, I'll be seeing you soon."
She remembered his condition.
"We'll get there as soon as we can."
"How far apart are we?" asked Rugum.
Deliani was about to answer when the moon's edge was blemished by a cloud, and it proceeded across the face until the orb was covered. The mist returned to the ring as Tally lowered it. Then the haze disappeared. Except for a pale glow, the ring was normal.
"Just as well it ended there," said Speckerin. "Rest for what's left of the night. In the morning, we begin a new adventure."
Deliani helped him to his feet, and he climbed back to his tree hole.
Now human beings, he thought, settling himself in. Astounding. Why would they be with humans? As if we haven't enough trouble with Granums and Volodons and everything else in the world. I only hope these humans won't intrude on us or our friends and place obstacles in our path toward reunion. Chapter 49.
I'll be $200 richer when we get there, said Nathan, lounging in the back seat of a red convertible. His friends were in front.
I'm sure, said Michael in the passenger seat, turning to look at Nathan. We're going to see a little man 1 foot tall.
With feet a foot long, laughed Patrick, the driver.
Foot-long hot dogs, chortled Mike.
I never said his feet were a foot long, said Nathan. They're about this long. He held his hands 2 or 3 inches apart as Mike glanced back.
Why don't you just give us each $100, he said. We'll turn around and go home.
How's he going to come up with that kind of money? Asked Pat.
That's his problem, said Mike. A bet's a bet, and he's got to put his money where his mouth is.
They were on their way to John Versteeg's hunting lodge to settle a wager. Patrick Bradley was 16, just old enough to drive, and Michael Tomlin, 15. Christopher had beseeched Nathan not to tell a soul what was happening at the lodge, and for more than 2 weeks he hadn't breathed a word of it. But it was on his mind constantly, and yesterday, while talking with Mike and Pat in a drugstore booth, temptation finally overcame him, and, red in the face, he blurted it out. My brother and I are taking care of someone special at my grandpa's lodge.
Who's special? Asked Mike.
You won't believe this, said Nathan. A tiny person who speaks English. He's only 1 foot tall and has big dark eyes and really long feet.
Give me a break, chuckled Pat. You're right, I don't believe it.
His friends knew Nathan tended to exaggerate, but this was far beyond anything he had ever come up with. Questions, remarks, and insults issued from them, which made Nathan even more insistent it was true. At first he had no intention of taking them to the lodge, but when he added that 2 ravens were there, which the little man and an invisible partner used as transportation, his friends each bet him $100 on the spot that he couldn't show them a miniature man, and they'd drive to the lodge to settle the issue.
Tomorrow, Sunday, is the only day I can go, said Pat. I start my summer job on Monday.
He laughed. Tiny man with big dark eyes and long feet. I don't know where you come up with this stuff. This one takes the cake.
The following morning, Christopher and his grandpa were getting ready to leave for the lodge when Nathan told them he had other obligations, lawns to mow. He would see the Kierans next weekend, or perhaps during the week, now that school was out, and his grandfather and brother left without him. He did have lawns to mow, and did them hurriedly, then met his friends and they left.
This is a heck of a long ways to come, even for $100, said Pat, pulling into the parking area next to Mr. Versteeg's car.
They climbed out and headed along the pathway through the woods. During the drive out, Nathan began to have cold feet. He was taking a big chance, and he knew it. He could only hope his grandfather and brother were away from the lodge when they got there. Shooting, fishing, anywhere but inside where he hoped to find Jilin. His grandfather would wonder how he got there and why he hadn't come with them, to say nothing of what would happen if he saw Mike and Pat. As they made their way to the lodge, all Nathan could think was what a bad idea it was to come today. Reaching the clearing, Nathan told the other boys to wait while he checked things out. Reluctantly, they did. Nathan approached the building cautiously, opened the ground-level door quietly, and looked down the hall. He stepped inside to listen and heard nothing.
Moving quickly to the bedroom occupied by the Kirins, he pushed the door open. There was Jilin, sitting beside Luana on the floor. The Kirin glanced up, startled by the sudden appearance of the boy he had been told wouldn't be here.
"You came after all," said Jilin, getting to his feet, calamar in hand. "Your grandfather said you had other things to do."
Nathan bolted from the doorway, burst outside, and ran as hard as he could to his friends.
"Come on," he whispered hoarsely.
"For what?" said Pat loudly. "The little man? Enough's enough. Fork over the money and let's get out of here."
"Quiet," said Nathan. "Just come and hurry it up."
The three trotted across the grass, Pat and Mike guffawing and prancing all the way, Nathan trying to quiet them. They entered and he led them to the room.
"There," he said, pointing down at Jilin.
The boys stared, dumbfounded. Just as Nathan had described, it had long feet, dark searching eyes, and was a foot tall. Next to it was a huge black bird with tape wrapped around it.
"What did I tell you?" whispered Nathan. "Now, let's get the heck out of here."
Afraid of being discovered, he felt something else that came as a surprise. Guilt about sensationalizing and exposing Jilin.
"Can it talk?" asked Pat, amazed. "You said it speaks English."
"Not now," said Nathan, more desperate by the moment. "You've seen him. Let's go."
Jilin was shocked at the appearance of foreign humans in what had been such a safe place. He wanted to escape, but their huge bulk was blocking the doorway, and the windows were closed. Soon, however, with Nathan pleading, the two strangers turned, still ogling Jilin, and moved off down the hallway, the door slamming behind them. Outside, Nathan urged the boys to run to the border of trees where the pathway began. There they stopped to discuss what they had seen.
Kirins, The Spell of Noan, written and narrated by James D. Priest.
To learn more about Kirins, visit www.kirinbooks.com.
You have been listening to A Good Book on Sun Sounds of Arizona.